Peter Welch, I see that your Energy Efficiency Improvement Act has been taken up by the House and is expected to be signed by the president.
That's right.
What's in it?
There's good news here. Two things. Number one, energy efficiency is one area where I've been able to find common ground with many of my Republican colleagues with whom I totally disagree on climate change and the urgency of the problem and the need to act. But when it comes to energy efficiency, a lot of my colleagues are on the same page as me. Less is more. And whatever the fuel source, if you can use less of it, you're going to save money. And, of course, when you do energy efficiency things, you're putting local people to work and you're saving dollars for homeowners and businesses. This was the first energy bill that we passed, and what it does is three things. One, it sets up a tenant star system comparable to building star, where you're going to have tenant spaces in these big rental buildings have an incentive to have the most energy efficient build-out that they can get. Second, it eliminates some regulatory barriers that have been an impediment to installing large-scale water heaters. This is really important in a lot of rural areas where it's used for demand management and lowering the peak demand. And then third, it's requiring in federal buildings that we constantly monitor our energy use and set benchmarks so that the federal government, which is a huge renter of commercial space, do better year after year after year on reducing energy demand. And what I see in this is two things. First, the things that we accomplished are worthwhile. They're going to save on energy bills. But second, modest as they are, it's a trust-building event. We have gotten Republicans and Democrats on the Energy and Commerce Committee to unite behind getting something done. And I'm hoping that is a harbinger for better things to come.
So as like the teenagers would say, Like, do you get the credit for this in the Republican House?
Well, we all get the credit. I mean, my goal here, we're in the minority, and
right.
We're going to get anything done. I'm going to need to get Republicans to be willing to work with me and put it on the floor. And what it means on my part is that I have to accept that there's limitations on what I can do because their agenda is different than mine. But where there's some creativity and goodwill, I can get some help if I can fashion something that works within the constraints that they feel. And energy efficiency is a place where I'm finding I'm able to make a good deal of progress. The chair of the committee, Fred Upton from Michigan, he's been extremely helpful, and he's made it very clear that if there are some of these bipartisan initiatives that we can put together in a practical bill form, he's going to help us. And he did. So this, we've got to keep at it, but this is a good step.
Well, do you get to be the lead on this bill, or do you have to share that, or does somebody else come away and rob your good idea?
No, I work with David McKinley, a Republican from West Virginia. But let me tell you something. You know, the effective legislators I've admired, folks like Teddy Kennedy and even Barney Frank, they were never a hog for credit. Now, a lot of times they got credit because the folks covering the legislature saw how good they were. But when you saw them in action, they were always really looking to work with other people. They were happy to share credit. If they got it, it wasn't because they claimed it. It was just an acknowledgement that they did a lot of hard work and did a good job. So, the thing I'm hearing from voters is it's not, Peter, what did you get done? It's why don't you all get together and get something done? And if I get some positive reinforcement from Vermonters, it's because they do have a sense that I'm trying to take walk the extra mile to see if I can find some common ground with Republicans, with whom on a lot of other things I'm in sharp disagreement.
So I just saw, Peter Welch, that you have been in Ukraine and also Tunisia, both of which are very interesting to me. Ukraine, of course, that's a problem that is still explosive. Tunisia is where the first of the great Arab revolutions occurred. Maybe you could give us a little report.
Well, I can. I mean, I traveled with Kevin on a congressional trip with Kevin McCarthy, the Republican majority leader in the House, and six other Republicans. So I was the one Democrat. And we went to two areas that are really two of the prime areas of concern for peace. One, the Middle East with Tunisia, as you mentioned, where the Arab Spring started. And Tunisia had 9 days before we were there suffered this horrendous terrorist act where two men with Kalashnikovs went into a museum where they have pre-Roman artifacts, beautiful, beautiful museum, and slaughtered about 22 tourists. It was just horrible. And I was really pleased that that event happened before, obviously, we went. But McCarthy insisted that we keep our schedule and not, for security reasons, change it. And it was a real, I think, boost for the Tunisian people that a high-ranking member of Congress, Kevin McCarthy, the majority leader, paid so much attention to their situation and tried to reinforce our support. They did have that terrorist act, but Tunisia has been relatively calm. They don't have that horrible sectarian violence that's afflicting Libya, Syria, Iraq, and so much of the Middle East. So they've had a democratic election. They've got a functioning, if fragile, government. They've got a functioning, if weak, economy. So the goal there was to give them all the boost that we could and also reinforce that we do want to provide economic aid for practical things that Tunisians are doing for democracy building and economic strength. So that was the first stop. And the second was Ukraine, where the real focus there is, again, Eastern Europe. Putin is being very aggressive. He seized unilaterally the Crimea. He's causing enormous trouble in the eastern border region. And the real question is the threat to the post-World War II order, where there was a renunciation of the use of force to change political boundaries. And that's under challenge in Ukraine. So our visit there was with the prime minister and the president and the finance minister, specifically to take assessment of what the situation is. And one of the pending questions was whether the U.S. should provide lethal defensive aid to the Ukrainian army. And that was it's a really tough question to answer. And a lot of my colleagues were in favor of doing that. I came away after we met with ministers in not just Ukraine, but in France and Germany, who were essential in negotiating the ceasefire. I came away with the view that it would make a bad situation worse if we escalate on the military end, but we've got to double down in the political and the economic aid side.
Do they want our bodies on their ground?
No, they don't. They were requesting, President Poroshenko is requesting military aid and some training. They're getting some training, but the whole question of military aid that would then be used on the border region raises the question of who has the escalation advantage. And it's a very close call. But our German and French counterparts who really have taken the lead in these negotiations, President Hollande and Chancellor Merkel, are very strongly of the view that if you just add more weapons on the border, it won't work. And in fact, it'll be met with more weapons where Russia has a significant military advantage. So they see the political approach here as absolutely the way to go.
Peter Welch, Democrat of Vermont at large, the only congressman from Vermont. We appreciate your being with us, Peter. It's always great to have a report. And I know how hard you're working down there and that you're giving us this time. We appreciate it. When we come back the next time, I want to talk to you about, Iran.
Great.